The following AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book. AA's Preamble. Alcoholics Anonymous is a fellowship of men and women who share their experience, strength, and hope with each other, that they may solve their common problem and help others to recover from alcoholism. The only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. There are no dues or fees for AA membership. We are self-supporting through our own contributions. AA is not allied with any sect, denomination, politics, organization, or institution, does not wish to engage in any controversy, neither endorses nor opposes any causes. Our primary purpose is to stay sober and help other alcoholics to achieve sobriety.
And now to share her experience, strength, and hope with us, we have Mary.
Hi, my name's Mary. I'm an alcoholic. I like to qualify my qualification by saying that this is completely just my experience in AA, and basically my experience is as someone who grew up in AA, and I don't know that. I don't know how true what I have to say is, because one thing that I find is that my understanding of what is real and true changes from day to day, and sometimes in a very profound and substantial way. So whatever I say today, don't hold me to it like 6 months from now, because I might not feel the same way about it. But at the moment, like, this is my opinion based on my experience, as truthfully as I can relay it. And the one thing that I want to say before I start with my story is I was just thinking as I was sitting here, what's the major thing that's changed and continues to change since I've gotten sober? And that is that the world continues to become a softer place to live. I was just talking with a girlfriend yesterday about some children, her child, some friends of ours' child, and just what's happening for them in their lives, and thinking about what I think happened to me in my life. And just my heart just really opened up with this this kind of compassion for how delicate I feel like we all are as people. And how harshly I treated myself and the people around me, and was treated by the people around me. And just that through being sober, I've been able to become more of that delicate person again. And the world around me just feels, like I said, softer. I think I was born with this disease. And for me, it manifests in the way I perceive the world is through what I consider a broken brain. As far as I'm concerned, I was born with a birth defect of the brain called alcoholism. And it means that I frame my experience based on those symptoms that they talk about in the big book. Oversensitive, restless, irritable, discontent. Like, that's the viewfinder with which I see and experience the world. And that's my default setting. And, you know, my father raced airplanes for a living, and he died in an air race when I was just over a year old. And so the next few years of my life, it was only my mother and I. And I remember being a young girl, 3 or 4 years old, and thinking to myself, how am I going to have kids without a dad? Because this is so good. And why I think that was is because my alcoholism was completely being treated during those years because I was absolutely the center of this woman's world. Everything I said, did, thought, felt was completely met with complete attention by this other person. And I was getting ready to turn 6, and she remarried. And that's when things really started to change. And, you know, I think it was just that's when I stopped getting that medicine. And my mom's attention went to this man, and he had a son, and things really changed. And there was also, you know, now angers in the house that hadn't been there before, and just, you know, a lot of things changed. But the main thing is, you know, irregardless of what my situation, you know, what the 12 steps show me is that I'm powerless over what happened and what my circumstances were and are, but I'm not powerless in how I perceive them. I can start to carve this new perspective through these tools where I can view and experience my life in a way that brings me healing to this broken brain. And the first thing I used to treat my alcoholism was fantasy. I had an active fantasy life and still do. And I have to be careful with it because it is still something that will, you know, breed a lot of discomfort for me because I used to really struggle with that saying, like, beyond our wildest dreams, because I have, like, some really wild dreams. And so I was like, I don't know if things can get better than what I'm thinking because I'm thinking some really great stuff. But the thing is that these fantasies that I have, what happens is I'm on the subway and it's like I get a little restless, so I start fantasizing and it calms me out. And then my subway stop comes and I have to get back in the world and I get pissed because now I have to interact with you. And I was just a millionaire decorating my fucking apartment. Like, I just, you know, and I had this co-op, and the actors come, and we do, like, it was just so, there's no, so I have to be vigilant, like, about my mind. And so anyway, so that was my first drug. And, you know, it's funny, because I always thought, like, I was a pretty good kid, a pretty straight kid, and, you know, I know that I had this problem with drinking and drugging, but I got sober pretty young, and, you know, I was pretty smart. I kind of got away with everything in high school, but it's kind of textbook. Like, I just went back and looked at my transcripts from high school, which I quit, by the way, and it was like A, B, and occasional C. I started using at 15, and it was just like C, D, C, D, E, C, D, E, like, textbook. And that's what I mean by like what's real or what's true. Like, I don't know, because before I looked at these transcripts, like, I would have thought it was true. Like, I did pretty good in high school. It's like, I didn't go to high school. I didn't get good grades and I quit and I got my GED. So, you know, but what happened was when I was 15, I drank and I did everything at 15 for the first time that I hadn't done before and that I would do, pretty much. And up until the time that I did everything, I thought I wouldn't do any of those things. And that's for me, like, one of the great indicators of my alcoholism, because and also one of the things that I'm so grateful for my brand. I think that everybody, you know, we come in and we're individuals. We may all have this disease, but we're individuals, and our story and our lineage and our history and how things affect us and how we can use or not use, like, it's so, like, I love that the book is like, I don't really know why it works the way it does, but we all, you know, this is a solution because, but the way I drank was great for me because there's no question for me about my alcoholism. I've never questioned it from the day I got sober. And well, actually, from the day I was introduced to AA. And so one of those things is just how quickly everything became permissible that I didn't think would be permissible. So, you know, I literally, a few months before I used for the first time, was lecturing my girlfriend on her smoking pot and being like, you know, I'm high on life. And this little, like, chubby girl doing the snake on the ground at the roller skating rink, sober. Like, I was like, you don't need drugs to be an asshole in public. Like, you know, within a few months, like, I just remember there's drugs in my story. And part of that, I think, is because of my age. Because it was just so much easier to do drugs than it was to drink. Because I worked and had money and could go to the drug dealer. But to get alcohol, I needed somebody else to do it. And I don't like other people fooling around with my situation. Like, I don't want to fool with you. I want to get what I need to make it through the day, and I don't want you to interfere or have anything to say about it. So I drank plenty, but it was, you know, it was, you know, an occasion. But anyway, I just remember the first time I used, I wasn't afraid. And I want to say this because I didn't know I was afraid until I used. It wasn't until there was this absence of fear that I was like, holy shit, like, this is great. I didn't know that that's what it was. You know, I didn't know that that was what was kind of keeping me a little bit on the outside, was fear. And that's the other thing about staying sober and working this program is I find out stuff I didn't know about myself. So anyway, I started drinking and I was daily pretty quickly. I mean, it was certainly Friday through Sunday right away. And then, you know, within a couple of years, like, I just woke up in the morning and started getting high and was high all day until I went to bed and didn't think anything of it. Increasingly, like, my job got in the way, my school got in the way, my friends got in the way, like, by the time I was a senior in high school, I'd reduced myself to two friends, a junior and a sophomore who drank and drugged the way I did. And everybody else was pretty alienated. And the final kind of nail in my coffin was when I turned 18, I inherited my inheritance because, you know, my dad had died. So he didn't have a will, so everything was divided between my mom and I. And so there was no control put on me. So I basically ran through all of that money within a year. It was just me and my two girlfriends in hotel rooms doing as much drugs as we could. And you know, I wasn't very creative. Like, it didn't occur to me to leave town, you know, or, you know, follow the dead or something really fun. Like, I, you know, go to Europe and backpack. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I just sat in a hotel room in Hope Mills, North Carolina, doing cocaine off the mirror. Do you know what I mean? Like, that's all I did. You know, I attribute it to being a small town girl and just not being exposed to a lot. So I was determined to go on my senior trip. So I, even though I didn't have any friends in the senior class, I wanted to go to the Bahamas. So I couldn't get any alcohol. we had to get in the van, and we were going to drive down to Fort Lauderdale and then take a boat. And I was in this van with all these people, and all I could get was this mason jar full of moonshine. And I had a little bit of pot, but I couldn't do anything. You know, we're on the car. I can't do that. And I just remember this kid, Ronnie Gibson, in the back of the car getting loaded. And I was so jealous. That little shithead was getting loaded, and I'm drinking and drinking and drinking this moonshine, and nothing is happening. And that, to me, is like a great indicator of like my alcoholism, because I don't know what was in that bottle. You know, it tasted like turpentine, and it wasn't working, and I drank it and just kept drinking it, you know. And that's you know, that's how I know I qualified for my seat. While I was down there, I just got to Florida. We got to the hotel, and my dad was a magistrate at the time, and basically the cops had come to my dad and told them what I was doing. I mean, I'd inherited my money, and I'd bought this car, and my license plate said Mary Mary, and it's like at the Coke house every day, and in a town, the population of 40,000, and the cops figured out like what I was doing. So they basically told my dad like what was happening, and that they were gonna, you know, that they were gonna do this big high school bust, and like I was on the list. And if he didn't want me to get busted, that he should do something. So my mom got on a plane and flew down to Fort Lauderdale and took me home. This is the first inkling that she had any idea of what was wrong. And or what was going on, or that anything was wrong or going on. And, you know, I don't attribute that to my great skill at hiding what was happening. She was just occupied. And on that plane ride, I just kind of vomited to my mom everything that had been happening. And it's something that... you know, I'm so sorry to her for that, that she had to hear it, because no one should know those things about their daughter. It's just more information I feel like she really, you know, deserved to hear. Because, you know, I wasn't, like I said, that permission thing, like... I'm just trying to be delicate, but you know, I'm really lucky. Like, nothing violent or horrible happened to me, but I put myself in situations that were dangerous, and created an environment where I had a lot of stuff to untangle when I got sober. And had I not been drinking, that wouldn't have happened. So anyway, my mom heard all of that and put me in a rehab. Now, I wasn't going to go to the rehab because I didn't have a problem. I didn't really understand involuntary commitment, so I didn't bring underwear or toothbrush, and I regretted that later. You know, there were a miracle happened there, and I want to, you know, a miracle happened there. The first night I was there, they had an AA meeting that they brought in, and they read how it works before the meeting. And when they read the steps, I heard that first step, and it said, we're powerless over alcohol, and our lives have become unmanageable. And I heard it, like, in my bones, and I understood that it wasn't my principal or my mom or the guy or the whatever, but it was the fact that I was drinking and drugging too much that had brought me to this place, and that if I was going to have a chance at a life, I had to stop. And I got sober 9 months later. So, you know, I don't really consider myself like a relapser, because during that 9 months, I never really got sober. I mean, I think I put together 42 days once, but, you know, that was it. And I, you know, after I went in rehab, I quit high school, I didn't go back. And then it was, you know, a lot of drama where, like, my mom took my car keys so I wouldn't, because I was obviously using again. So then I went and had my girlfriend pick me up, went to the dealer, got another car key made because the car is in my name, and took my car. And, you know, I had finally figured out that I could leave town. So it was like I was going to go get money out of the bank. I'd met this guy in rehab. We'd just, you know, bonded over a great trip. And I was going to – I'm finally going to go around the country. And the police show up and handcuff and shackle me and take me to the hospital. And, these are just the kind of things, like, my parents were doing everything they could to get me to college. I'd already been accepted to a conservatory, and, you know, so they didn't really care about my grades or that I'd finished high school. I just needed my GED. So basically, I left that night and was driven to take the GRE, like the GED the next day. And, you know, luckily, I you know, was able to pass it. And, they didn't know what to do with me. They sent me to Chicago to see my brother. It was just one of those crazy things. On the train, like on the way up there, I got fucked up the whole way. And on the way back, I got fucked up the whole way. And sitting in my brother's apartment for the 2 weeks I was there while they were figuring out what to do with me, you know, I realized in retrospect, I'm just so grateful that I wasn't, that suicide didn't occur to me. Because had it occurred to me, there was nothing to stop me from killing myself. It just didn't occur to me. But I was so empty. And, you know, it was also that year before I'd gotten busted that my parents and I and my younger brother took a bus tour down to Orlando to do Disney World. And this was a real eye-opener once I got sober, too. I was so miserable on that trip and such a bitch to everybody and wouldn't talk to anybody. And there was another girl my age on the bus, and I wouldn't talk to her. It was such a great picture of, like, me as an alcoholic. Like, without cigarettes and drugs and alcohol, like, I was not able to function, and I was not a nice person. I was not easy to get along with. And on the bus ride back, the girl and I ended up talking, and, like, she was a really cool chick, and I think I could have partied the whole time I was in Disney World, but, like, I didn't have the ability to, like, make friends with somebody at that point already, like, without a drink in my hand. So I wasn't functioning. So my parents put me in a halfway house in the town that I was going to go to college in, and, you know, I just was back and forth into meetings and trying to get through it, like, started school, moved into on campus. You know, my roommate was a using buddy from high school, and you know, I just was doing everything I could to kind of get through that semester. And it was just, you know, I hear people get to this point in their story, and like they were able to somehow muddle through and like get their degree, or they were able to muddle through and like have a relationship, or they were able, like, I couldn't muddle through anything. Like, I just couldn't, I couldn't function. I wasn't a good user. I loved hallucinogens, and, wasn't really present for that semester. And and I met some people in another fellowship and found out about all these things I hadn't tried yet, so I did try them. And none of it worked. I'd find a group of friends that I felt like used like I did, and then they would be like, you know what, you really use a little too much, and they would kick me out, and then I would find another group. And by February of my freshman year of college, like, I was done. And I had gone on a road trip with some friends, and I had a really bad night on the beach, and I feel really lucky that I lived through it, and it wasn't because anybody else put me in danger that night. It was because I was completely out of my head. And the next day, some family picked me up, and that night I was back at home in an AA meeting, and that was February 4th, 1989, and I haven't had a drink or a drug since. So I was 19 years old, and so I've never had a legal drink. And this is the thing where this is what I think is the truth, and I offer this to you as the truth. I don't know if it's the truth. I could be giving myself more credit than I'm due, but the reason that I feel like I've been able to stay sober all this time is, more than anything else, I understand that first step and believe without a doubt that there is no way that I can pick up a drink and it's going to work for me. It's just not going to work. Like, I tried it. I tried it standing on my head. I tried it fucking you. I tried it not fucking you. I tried it eating with you or not. Like, I tried it all the ways. It was only 5 years, but, like, I really gave it a good try. And I can't make my soul happy there. And one of the challenges for me of getting sober young is, which has passed, but it took a long time, and that is, oh, I forgot to start my timer. Thank you. God, I'm just going on because I thought it hadn't been 18 minutes yet. Okay, is that, I was just getting ready to give everybody the answer. And does anybody remember where I was? No, I'm serious. What was oh, okay, yeah. Oh, right. Okay, so my self-esteem was so tied up in being an alcoholic. You know, it was the one place that I've just told you how much I didn't succeed, but that's in retrospect. While I was doing it, I really thought it was working. While I was doing it, like, I was really getting a lot out of it. While I was doing it, like, that's who I was. Like, I was the person that when I was introduced to Jack Daniels, like, I knew what to do with it, you know, and didn't need a chaser and didn't need, like, I understood this bottle and what it did and how to function with it and got it, and it's fine, you know. I understood, you threw up, you made room for more, you laid on your back, like, whatever the fuck it took, like, you just drank and it was fine. And so now I'm 19 and I'm sober and I'm in college and I'm getting a degree with a bunch of kids, you know, my age that are drinking and partying. And then I'm moving to New York and I'm going to clubs and I'm waitressing at the all-night diner. And, like, I'm, you know, I'm still with, you know, doing all that stuff. But, like, I'm a sober person, and all the people that are my peers that I'm supposed to be emulating, like, are getting to drink and do this thing that, like, I'm supposed to be really good at and not able to do. And it was really confusing. And, but I kept coming back. I kept knowing that I was powerless. And room just got created for me to exist in the world. And, you know, this is a great place, and it's a place where you can be. I know I'm going to be done in a second. If the thing that happens is, if I pick up a drink, like, I just don't know what's going to happen. I don't know that I can get back here. But if I'm here, there's a lot of room for me to mess up. There's a lot of room for me to be an alcoholic and not do it right. I was in a relationship by 60 days where I was with the guy for 5 years. I got my first abortion sober. Like, you know what I only had one. But, you know, like, there's, I 2 years sober, I was in the hospital again for another 28 days for bulimia. Like, I haven't had a graceful recovery. Like, there's no right way to do it. But if I drink, like, all bets are off. Like, I could be dead. I could just, that, I see it. It's been 22 years, like, you see it. The button turns in the brain, and we lose people. Like, we lose them. if we stay here, we have a chance for that channel to go a different way. And amazing things happen. This is a beautiful place. And it's fun to be sober now. And I have finally crossed, this last thing I'll say, I finally crossed that line where I honestly can say, like, my worst day sober is better than my best day drinking. I had to stay sober a while for that to really be true. I did. But it did become true, and it's so worth it. So thank you for having me.
The preceding AA talk was recorded at the weekly Never Had a Legal Drink group of Alcoholics Anonymous. The opinions of the speaker do not necessarily represent those of the group or AA as a whole. Rather, this story represents one person's experience. If you have a desire to stop drinking and would like help, contact Alcoholics Anonymous at www.aa.org, or you can find AA listed in your local telephone book.